Our thoughts and life experiences line the hallways of our hearts and souls like pictures. Welcome to the podcast where we explore what those pictures look like and the effects they have on our lives. Welcome to Hallways of the Heart and Soul. Episode 1, Toxic Popsicles.
So this podcast, you had this idea, and I'm really excited that you actually made it to like be on it, because I would have never come up with idea, because I'm a 9 and I'm Mr. Peaceful. So like, as things are,
yeah, you might need to explain what exactly a 9 is to some people who
for those people
aware of the Enneagram.
For those people in Enneagram world, some people got it, some people didn't. In Enneagram, I'm a 9, which is like the peacemaker. So for me, a still like lake is my like safe zone. Like for the cause of peace or for the sake of peace, that's where I live. Like, so no confrontation, no just starting stuff out of the blue. Like if it's sweet, peaceful, and quiet, that's where I live.
And I'm a 4, which I recently spoken in the church that we attend, and I told them that 4s are like on Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, when Indy is chopping the bridge in half and he looks at Short Round and he says in Chinese, I guess, like, hold on to the bridge, and then Short Round looks back at the lady and says, hold on, lady, we going for a ride. Like, that's
I love
that's what a 4 is like emotionally up 1 minute, you know, to the heights and then to the depths of hell like 5 minutes later. And so it's like constantly sucking energy from everyone I come in contact with. 4s are the human black holes of society, which is why I think they say there is 4 is the least amount of people in the world, because the world would probably just burn and 4s would be like, yes, let it burn.
Wow, I love it. I absolutely love that. So now that people know what our numbers are, we're here recording a podcast, HHS, and we decided for this first episode that we're just going to kind of look back and let you guys know out there in podcast world kind of like our stories or like key events that happened in our past that kind of shaped who we are today. So, Mr. Griffin, I'm going to let you take the lead on this one.
Well, I was born January 23rd, 1981, and honestly, everything was going great until when I was 5 years old or so, my parents split. And as you can imagine, to a 5-year-old, that rocked my world. Subconsciously, I'm still discovering things from little 5-year-old Zach that he hid, you know. And so one of the biggest things that did in me was, I think, consciously and deeper subconsciously instilled in me that love doesn't last, that everything good will come to an end, that I'll never be able to attain any kind of love, be it love from my parents, love from my friends, or, you know, love from anyone. And so, and that sounds super harsh, but that's just the reality for me as a 5-year-old. And that probably plays a lot into, you know, why I'm a 4 on the Enneagram. And so for the most part of my life, growing up in school and in the middle school, like, there was this constant search for, you know, acceptance, for love. And the paradox of it is that I am longing for this love that I need to the core of my being, but the other half of me doesn't believe that I'll ever get it. And so there's this tug of war that's like, I need this love. And then the other side goes like, but you're never going to get this love because, you know, love doesn't last. Love isn't real. And so that plays into, you know, my whole life in elementary school. And then going into middle school, you know, I was a head taller than everyone in seventh grade. And in seventh grade, I weighed like 220 or 230. And so my mom talked me into joining the football team. I really didn't care anything about playing football. Like, I love watching football, but I didn't care about playing football. But she talked me into playing football, and so I played football, and I fell in love with it. And they became, the brotherhood of the football players became like everything that I had always dreamed of. You know, like, there was this acceptance of the group, the tribe. You know, everybody liked me. You know, from day one, you know, I started on the offensive line, so it was like I was in the starting group. So
that's awesome. You know, I love that.
Yeah, and so everything was going good. I played seventh grade. Everything was great. And then I played eighth grade as well. But something shifted in eighth grade when I started hanging out with, you know, this was like 1994, 1995. So like grunge, the grunge group was
yes.
like big back then.
Love it.
With like Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden and people like that. And so somewhere along the line in eighth grade, I decided that I wanted to find my acceptance in the grunge group instead of the football group. And the problem with that was like the grunge group and the football group were at odds with each other. So it was like, if you played football, the grunge group was the losers. But if you were like in the grunge group, then like the football players were the losers.
Yeah. I can't imagine a world where those two guys would hang out with each other.
Exactly. And so, you know, I decided to cash it all out of the football group. And so I played, you know, eighth grade year, but then I decided at the end, like, okay, I'm not going to play anymore. And so I joined this, you know, grunge group, we'll call it. And, you know, everybody had like long hair.
It's
and
true.
Like, never showered.
I was going to say, you guys did not shower. And some reason, y'all's facial hair came in so fast.
Yeah, and it was like, we never showered, you know, wore clothes, like baggy clothes, and like, I remember I had this like pair of gray corduroys that I probably wore like three times a week to school and stuff like that. And,
yes.
And so that's when, for me, like, the acceptance and the love of the group like kicked up a notch, because that's when the first time I ever had alcohol and marijuana.
How old were you?
It was eighth grade, so whatever that is, 13, 14.
You got to jump. You got to jump. That's awesome. Get in there.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's when I started smoking cigarettes in eighth grade. Like, I hated it. I hated the way it tasted, but it was like, I look cool and I feel cool and they're accepting me. So
yeah, those were the rules of your tribe. So you were obviously being accepted. So you did it even though you didn't care for it.
Yeah. And that was long. That was at the time, too, that I started playing an instrument, which now, like, I love playing guitar. But at the time, the group I was with had a band and they needed a bass player. And like, I was like, well, I'll play bass just because I wanted to fit in and be a part of the group. And so I got a bass and I started taking bass lessons. And, you know, we had this really crappy band that we thought was awesome, which I'm pretty sure that's how it is for 15 and 14 year olds.
What was the name of your band?
Oh, God, dude, you don't want to. I think, seriously, it was Toxic Popsicles.
Are you kidding me?
Yes. No, dude, no. Like, we thought that was totally cool. Like,
I love that, first of all.
Name, like, is Toxic Popsicles, and we're going places. Watch out.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know that you started on bass. I knew you played guitar, but I did not know you started on the bass.
Yeah, because I just want, you know, I wanted to fit in, and so that was going into ninth grade. And so, you know, things just started escalating. You know, I started, you know, getting drunk more. And you know, or at least drinking more. And then I started, you know, smoking more weed and stuff. And the way I can describe it was, is like my life was like slowly spiraling out of control. And what happened was, somewhere in the, you know, middle of ninth grade, the group that I was with like completely kicked me out for no reason at all. The grunge group just turned their backs on me and kicked me out of the village, kicked me out of the group. And it was, as you can imagine, devastating, because I'd already turned my back on the football crowd, and now the grunge crowd had turned their back on me. And so I was literally nowhere with no one, you know, nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when things started getting a little darker for me. Which I'm not even sure I ever told you this or told anybody. Like, I started hanging out with people who were cutters, you know,
really
like, would cut themselves. Like,
yeah.
I never cut myself. But I would, you know, I would spend the night with people who would like take aluminum cans and like cut them in half and then cut their chest open with the aluminum cans.
Holy crap.
Yeah, really, really freaky stuff. And, which that freaked me out at the time. Like, but, you know, I felt honestly like I was just getting closer and closer to the edge of this cliff. And, what had happened, I had this one friend the summer going into ninth grade who went to this Christian camp, and he had this incredible encounter with God. And I had known this guy since second grade, so we were like really, really close. And he wasn't part of like the football crowd or the grunge crowd. He was kind of in his own crowd. And so he came back, and right at the beginning of school, ninth grade year, he was like, dude, you got to go to this camp, you know, like, I had this crazy encounter with God, and you got to, you know, like, for me, I've always been the kind of person where, like, I've always respected people's beliefs, mm-hmm. you know, I've always respected people's, you know, where they stand on different issues. And so I was like, you know, I mean, that's cool that happened for you. That's cool. That's where you want to go. But I was like, I'm just not into that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, every day of ninth grade year, like, he would bug me about going to this stupid camp. And so, like, you know, like August, September, October, November, go to this camp, December, go to this camp, January, go to this camp, February. So finally, it's probably like March, where like he like broke me down, and I was like, look, dude, if you stop asking me to go to this stupid camp.
Sounds like me. You're like almost like a 9 for the sake of peace. I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah. I was just like, just stop talking about this stupid camp, and I will go just to shut you up. Just shut up. you know. But while all this was going on, him talking about this camp, I was, you know, still into the depths of,
yeah,
you know, despair and loneliness and stuff. And so, the camp's in June, and I can remember, it finally got to the night before camp, and I'm an only child, and so, you know, I don't really, in that time of my life, like, I didn't have anybody, a brother, sister, you know, age to talk to at home about it or anything. So I remember it was the night before camp, and I went in my bedroom, and I had my bags packed, and I was totally dreading. It was a whole week at this Christian camp, you know, and you can imagine what I was thinking about Christian camp, you know, as a guy who was, like, into, like, metal music and, like, you know, alcohol and drugs and smoking. And
it's the best, you know, place, like, to be is Christian camp.
Like, I want to spend a week of my summer at a Jesus camp. So the night before, I remember I sat on my bed and I looked at the floor and I said out loud to myself, like, I'm not changing for anyone. And it was like this thing of like inside, you know, it was like, oh, my life is, my life is so good right now. Like the total lie, you know, like everything is going great for me. I'm not changing for anyone. Mm-hmm. I don't care what anyone does or tries to do.
Yes.
And so I think looking back, that was like a dare to God. For God, God was like, okay, we'll see, you know, because some pretty funny stuff happened after that. So I'll never forget going to the camp. The camp was probably like 10 minutes, 15 minutes away, but it seemed for real, like it seemed like we drove like 2 hours. I don't know if it's just because, you know, you're like 15 years old, you're not driving yet. It's out in the middle of nowhere. Like I'd never been there before. So it always feels like it takes forever to get there. And mm-hmm. so, you know, your first time going somewhere. And so we got there and you got to imagine what I look like. You know, I didn't look like a church kid. You know, I was at this point, I was probably like 250 pounds and I had hair like down to my shoulders, which I never washed. And I had on, you know, baggy corduroy pants, which I never washed. And I had on all these Nirvana shirts and, you know, band shirts. I can't remember exactly which ones. And
so basically you fit right in with the church crowd.
Exactly. Exactly. Like I was the guy, like when you walk into like a bar, the record scratches, you know, like I was the guy, like when you walk into church like, camp,
this joker like,
the
is
organ
lost.
Scratches, you know, the organ goes, you know, like the organ player passes out, you know.
It's like, can I help you, son? Are you lost?
And so I'll never forget though, like, we pulled in and I got out of the car and like for the first time in my life, people walked up to me and it didn't matter what I looked like.
Oh yeah.
It didn't matter what I talked like or what I did. You know, for the first time in my life, people just accepted me.
It's beautiful.
And I'll always remember, like, that was the beginning. Like, I felt like a little flicker in my heart, you know, like a flicker of hope that maybe this love and acceptance thing is real.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just me grasping for nothing. And so the first night, you know, at this camp, they have worship and they have a speaker and they have games and all this kind of stuff. And so the first night they did all that and they were having worship and I was sitting at the very back because, like I said, I was like, they're doing their thing. I'm going to sit back here. I'm going to do my thing.
Yeah.
We're not going, you know, I'm not going to judge them. They're doing what they want to do. That's cool. Whatever. And so the first night, that's how it was. And we went back to the cabin that night, and the guys in my cabin, even though I had nothing to do with worship and nothing to do with any of the Jesus-y stuff at the camp that day, like, they still talked to me. They still expressed interest in me. And that was, like, so huge.
I was going to say, how did that make you feel?
It was huge because it was like, again, I didn't have to do anything. To like up and especially my middle school years up till then was like me running myself ragged, trying my hardest to please the crowd just so they would pat me on the back or maybe just so I can get a smile out of one of them, you know. So it had really, really worn me out. And so it was a breath of fresh air when people who I had nothing in common with, and I didn't really want to have anything in common with, were still treating me like a normal human being, like, and loving me. And so it was like, I remember that night too, like, there was that little more flicker of light and hope in my heart of like, and I remember thinking, like, what is this? Like,
did you think you were being set up for something?
No, I mean, it was more like, what is this going on right now? Like,
yeah,
this can't be real life, you know, like no one accepts someone just to accept someone. There's got to be a catch.
Yeah. Especially someone that I've never met before.
Yeah. And so, The next day, I don't remember anything, you know. We just played games and stuff. But the next night, my friends had invited me to come sit close to the front. And I remember we were sitting on the third row. And it was, you know, me and the guy who had invited me there. And I think that was when I first met you. Do you remember that? You were in my cabin.
Yeah, we were all in the cabin together. I remember, I knew of you in like middle school, just our middle school wasn't huge. So everybody kind of knew of people. But I didn't really like meet you until camp.
So it was probably like you and Brandon and a couple other friends were sitting there on the third row. And the craziest thing happened, which is like, this is where God was like, that night before camp, I was like, I'm not changing for no one. I don't mm-hmm. care what anyone says. Like, mm-hmm. this is where God was like, pulled the biggest joke on me that I've ever seen in my whole life. It's the way I think of it. Like, this is how I know God has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
There was, back then, this was 1996, June 1996, and there was a Christian artist named Carmen. Which
you mean,
I'm not sure people know who Carmen is.
You mean the Christian artist known as Carmen. If you were a believer, yes. like I was back then, he was basically like, yes. he was the deal.
He was huge in 1996. but now you nobody knows him now. But like,
is he still alive? That's the question.
Anyway. Yeah, he's still alive. Yeah. Yeah. But so he had these really cheesy, like super, super cheesy songs where he was like a 40-year-old white guy rapping, or at least attempting to rap during these songs. And so if you were like a Christian your whole life and you weren't ever allowed to be exposed to like hip hop or anything like that, you would think it was like totally cool. Like, oh yeah, look at him go.
Which I did, because that was my life.
Yeah. Yeah. So like a 40-year-old white guy rapping was hip hop to Christianity back then. There was no Lecrae, you know.
There was no Lecrae. There was nothing actually good. But you didn't know any better, being a sweet believer. It was awesome.
So Carmen had this song called The Champion. And the whole premise of it is, it's got the whole Rocky vibe, where like Jesus is Rocky's character and Satan is whoever's Rocky's playing, you know. So like, let's say Drago, whoever. And so,
you mean Dolph Lundgren in Rocky IV? Yes. Yes.
I must break you.
I will break you.
So the whole song, and you know, Carmen's like rapping and he's got these choirs singing and stuff, and so. The premise of the song is Jesus and Satan boxing, and it's like a, you know, being narrated by Carmen, who's rapping to the best of his ability. But the funny part about it is there was this mime team who was dancing and ad-libbing and doing these moves with sticks to the song.
This is so embarrassing. But keep yes. going.
Actually, I don't think they didn't have sticks. No, there were no sticks. But like, there was mime teams, and like, if you don't know what a mime is, it's like people who paint their faces white, put on red lipstick, and they wear all black and have white gloves, and like they pantomime. That's where they get that from. You know, like, so they act out stuff.
I'm pretty sure I was. Was I on the mime team then?
I think you were in it.
I think I was.
You might have been in it.
I was. Yeah. And let me just tell you, sidebar, it was freaking hot because it's summer.
Yeah.
Black dude painting his face 96 white degrees. With lipstick and eyeliner. Need I say more? I'm so glad. Like, if Instagram or Snapchat was back then, my life would have been over.
We'd all be screwed.
Yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So They're acting out these cheesy mime characters are acting out these cheesy moves to this cheesy song about Jesus and Satan boxing to this cheesy music. And then the climax of the song, you know, Satan knocks Jesus down to the ground, and the referee, usually they count like 1, 2, 3, you're out, right? Well, in Carmen's great song, it says the referee starts by counting from 10 backwards. And so, you know, it goes through the whole dramatic process of like 10, 9, 8.
Oh my gosh.
And like the closer he gets to 1, like Jesus is like starting to, you know, twitch and stuff.
His legs start moving. His arms start moving.
Yeah. And so, but like, here's the deal for me. It's the most ridiculous thing ever. But I can't explain it. Like, when it gets to 1 and the guy who was playing Jesus, you know, is a really good friend of ours, Chad Broom, he was playing Jesus and like he rose on 1 like so perfectly. And the best way that I can describe it is when he rose, it was like lightning struck my heart. Like,
wow,
there that. I was in the third row, like literally seeing Jesus rise from the dead to this cheesy song.
To a mime, and of all things.
To a mime, yeah. And like right there, like lightning, that's the best way I can describe it. Like lightning struck my heart, and for the first time in my life, I knew what love was.
Wow.
I knew that love, or I knew a love that would never end. You know, a love to trump all other loves that I've been looking for, an acceptance to blow away every other acceptance that I was so striving for my whole life.
That's amazing.
And it was like in that moment I saw the universe of God's beauty and love. And it was everything that I had ever been looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And it might sound weird to you guys, but you know, it's even weird to me. I wasn't looking for it. I didn't want to be there. I didn't go looking for any experience or anything. I was just there trying to get my friend to shut up.
Yeah.
And the weird part that happened was, is like, I knew in that instant, like, this is what is worth giving everything for.
Yeah.
And this is what is worth living for.
Yeah.
And so the funny part is, I don't remember, a guy got up and preached after that. And like, I don't remember one word he said while he was preaching, because God and I were having a conversation like the whole time he was up there preaching. And it was just, you know, God was talking to me like, you know, you've got to give up some stuff. And then I would fight back and be like, yeah, but I don't want to give that up. But then God mm-hmm. would always come back with like,
mm-hmm.
I'm worth it. You know, this is worth it. That was the big theme that kept ringing in my ears. Like, this is worth everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this, whatever this is, you know, God, this experience, you know, because I didn't know what it was, you know, I wasn't looking for it. It was just something amazing happened to me. And from that moment on, like, God has been number one.
That's great.
And, you know, like, because I had finally found that love.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, you know, there have been multiple fallings and multiple screw-ups and multiple idiotic things I've done, but that love hasn't been like the love that I thought existed. The love that was like, okay, it's going to end one day. It's not going to be there. But his love, like, has, you know, stuck with me
mm-hmm.
through it all. And, you know, at that camp, like, I got home from that camp and I threw away all my music and I threw away all my clothes and like I got a haircut. I didn't really want to get a haircut. My mom kind of used the opportunity to
there you go
into getting a haircut. Yes. You know, so I got a haircut. But I remember going back to school in 10th grade and like people didn't really even recognize me because
you were a completely different person.
Yeah. And so for me, that was my beginning, you know, 21 years ago now, of me having my world blown away by this love that I never would have in a million years believed existed. You know, this acceptance, like, and it's really cool, because when you think about it, like, it all started with how people treated me.
Yep.
You know, how people just accepted me, even though they knew I didn't believe anything they believed in, even though they knew I didn't care about being there, even though they knew that, yeah, I was a worthless sinner or whatever, like, they still accepted me. And, like, that was the beginning, you know, of my heart waking up. And so that's why for me, like, yeah, I want to embrace everyone.
Yeah.
I want to accept everyone. Because, hey, that's what did it for me.
Yeah.
You know, is just showing love to people who think it doesn't exist, like me. And so I don't know, that's probably why, you know, in different ways I talk to people, like, that's, I always keep that in the forefront, you know, like, these people were just like me at one point.
Merriam-Webster defines the word beginning as the point at which something begins. In June of 1996, my life with God began. And this whole theme of beginning, it makes sense, right? Because He is, the Bible says, the beginning and the end. And I think lots of times we tend to put those two together, but I believe that you can break them apart and focus on each one. So, for instance, you can say, He is beginning. That all the time, God is constantly beginning something new, something fresh, something alive. The life of God is always beginning, every second, every day. And so maybe you find yourself in a tough place today where you don't know what's going on. You feel like everything's falling apart. You feel like you have nowhere to go, like life is over. And I want you to know that God is beginning. Right where you are, this very second, God is producing new life, and that you can tap into it. God's very essence is life and being, and He generously gives Himself away to all. So maybe right where you are today, you just need to stop and receive His offering of life, His offering of new beginning. No matter where you are, no matter what you've done, He's constantly offering it, because that's who He is. And so right now, take some time, just receive the life, receive the love, and receive the beginning that is God.